which came up several times from the crowd on Long Island last night. And I love the fact that the New Orleans Saints official team Twitter shouted out the York Saints last night, saying, "Hey, you can have the nickname for the night." So
yeah.
Fun night on the island as they watch their team take down the Boston Bruins in Game 6, and now it's the Islanders and Tampa in a Stanley Cup Final Four rematch of last year. Lightning won in 6 games last year and, of course, went on to win the Stanley Cup. We'll see if the Islanders have something a little bit different to offer up this year. All right, let's get quickly to the phones to a man who maybe was himself deafened like Barry Trotz was at the game last night, Pierre McGuire, who joins us each and every weekday morning at this time. Presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Pierre? How's the hearing?
Excellent, JR. Good morning to you, little Sean. Good
morning, Pierre.
I can hear by your voice, Pierre, that you had to shout maybe a little bit more than you normally would because of that crowd last night.
It was loud. There's no question it was loud. You know, there have been a lot of loud buildings. I remember the last game 6 they played in that building was against Pittsburgh. That was really loud, too. So it's hard to compare from night to night, but that was obviously extremely loud.
That's not far from where you live, Pierre. Have you seen, and the new rink is going to be open for this fall, and they spent a pile of money on it. Have they in any way, when they're putting together the plans for the rink, and I know it's going to be bigger, and what makes the Nassau County Coliseum is a part of it fun is the intimacy of it. Have they tried to make it so it'll be similar, or is it just not going to be? Is going to be a typical rink?
They've really tried to make it similar. They've tried to make the roof a little bit lower, and they've tried to make the lower bowl a little bit tighter. So the answer is yes. They've tried to bring a little bit of the coziness over. John Ledecky, one of the owners of the New York Islanders, he'd spent a lot of time on this project, setting it up and talking to fans and wanting to bring some of the charisma from Uniondale over to Belmont, where the new arena is going to be. So they've worked diligently on trying to do that.
They've gone from 14 5 guys to 17, so nothing crazy. JR commented, and you're there. Do you really feel like, and again, I know it's great in every playoff, but in this particular case, that this is worth basically a goal a game for the New York Islanders because it is so over the top?
I don't know if I can say a goal a game, but it's worth something, I can tell you that. And it starts in the warm-up, but it's definitely worth something. And the one thing that is really apparent, the control that the players have, even though they're enthusiastic and they're jacked up and everything else, they play under control. They're not out of control. And I think that starts with Barry Trotz and his message to the team. This is your role. This is how you have to play. If you don't play that way, you're not going to play a ton. And if you do play that way, you're going to play a ton. So he has them under control. There's no question about it. I'll give you an example. Last night, it's a straight matchup game. They're trying to shut down the Pasternak, Marchand, Bergeron line. It's just a straight matchup game. Matt Barzal in that game, a deciding game, played 11 minutes. 11 minutes in the game. Not because it was a knock on him, but because he doesn't kill penalties and he doesn't play in matchup situations. So they didn't get nearly as much ice time, or his line didn't, as they usually would. And again, that just speaks to how Barry Trotz deploys his assets and how he keeps everybody under control on his bench.
Pierre, I've talked to a couple of players who played under Barry Trotz, and they said he's not necessarily the biggest and best tactician necessarily. Maybe he hires assistants who more specialize in that, but his talents lay in other ways. You're there between the benches. Would you agree with that assessment, or is he a real good X's and O's guy and a good bench manager?
I don't know about the X's and O's part, but I'll tell you one thing. His asset management is phenomenal. He understands who to have on the ice at the right time of the game. For instance, when a goalie pull situation happens, more times than not, he's going to make sure he has J.G. Pageau on the ice. He's going to make sure that he has Casey Cizikas on the ice, and he's going to make sure he has Cal Clutterbuck. So what he has is he has a left-handed center iceman in Cizikas, a right-handed center iceman in Pageau, and a guy that's unbelievable on the boards in Cal Clutterbuck. That's just one example of how he manages his assets. The other night in Boston, Game 5 on the road, he's not going to get the matchups that he wants. So he flip-flops the center iceman because Brock Nelson is not playing as well as J.G. Pageau. So Nelson goes deeper in the lineup, Pageau goes up in the lineup, and they're trying to create more of a matchup environment. It's just He really handles his assets fantastically well. In terms of the tactics, I think a lot of that is deferred to his assistants.
Also, knowing him very well, does none of this work if he isn't a selfless, no ego, salt of the earth human being that at the end of the day, you know, to implement all this long term, is that a huge factor?
I would say yes. And I'll use an example of what Sean's talking about, JR. The other night, when he could have got really squirrely and mad and angry and started yelling at his team, which a lot of coaches would do, especially in that environment in Boston in Game 5, when his team had a substantial lead and lost, and all of a sudden it's a one-goal spread, 5-4. Rather than yelling and screaming, I was right there, calls a timeout, brings everybody over, and he says to them politely, he says, "Fellas, we're sitting back. We got to get back attacking. Let's get off our heels and get on our toes. Let's stop laying back." Didn't yell, didn't scream. Obviously, he had to raise his voice so people could hear him. But that's basically the message that he displayed to his team. And they went out and they were flawless the last, you know, probably 2 or 3 minutes of that game.
In 12 playoff games, J.G. Pageau has 13 points, which is tied for third in NHL playoff scoring. We're very familiar with his talents here in Ottawa. Is he the perfect player for the way the Islanders play hockey and the way that Barry Trotz coaches hockey?
Yes, he is. And I can tell you right now, it starts all the way at the top. As soon as they got him, obviously they signed him to a long-term extension. Lou Lamoriello has been fond of J.G. Pageau for a very long period of time. He admires players like that. They're coachable. They're selfless, as you talked about with Coach Trotz, Sean. And I think the biggest thing about JG is he really accepts the role that it's created for him. Now, last night he had 2 assists in the game, but that wasn't his job last night. His job last night was to go head-to-head with Patrice Bergeron. It's going to be a straight matchup game. I talked about it before the initial puck even dropped, and that's exactly what Barry did. It was pretty easy to decipher. Zajac and Palmieri are his 2 wingers, both guys that came from New Jersey that are plugged into the Lou Lamoriello-style system. And it worked fantastically well, but JG's a perfect player in that system.
Before I ask my question, Pierre, I'm going to admit I'm not a Charlie Coyle fan, but I know it's a team game. Just in comparison, how would you look at the move of bringing Coyle over and the huge extension versus what the Islanders did for Pageau at very comparable money? The effect that have either, and you may like Coyle, but I'm just saying the effect that both have had on those teams.
Well, if you look at it, you've got to be fair. Charlie's been a different kind of a player there. Charlie's a Boston kid. They brought him in because there's a sense of familiarity there. Played at Boston University, kid that went to Thayer Academy. They knew him really well. I would say that this year playoff wasn't as good. I'd say his first playoff back in 2018-2019 was really solid. In fact, they went to the Stanley Cup Final, and Charlie was really, really effective for them. The last two haven't been as good. So, I mean, it's easy to cherry pick on this, but I would say that JG has fit in better over the 2 years he's been with the Islanders than Charlie, who's been there in Boston for 3 years. But to be fair to Charlie, his first playoff in Boston, you can go look it up, he was fantastic.
Yeah. If we want to compare Islanders and Bruins acquisitions at the trade deadline this year, Kyle Palmieri had 4 goals in the series up here, and Taylor Hall had 1, and it was into an empty net in Game 1.
I talked about it before the game. I don't know if you watched our show or not, but that's exactly what I said. Yeah. Listen, it's put up time for that line with Craig Smith and David Krejci and Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall got 1 goal in Game 1. It was into an empty net. You know, Craig Smith had 1 goal in Game 3. The 2 games the Bruins won, they got offense from their second line. I said, if that line doesn't score, they're not going to win. And the reason why is because I knew, just knowing Barry, there was no way Bergeron, Marchand, or Pasternak 5-on-5 were going to make a difference. They might on the power play, and they did with Marchand getting 2 goals. But 5-on-5, they weren't going to make a difference because there was going to be 5 people committed to shutting down 3. And so that was going to open up a ton of room for the other players, and the other players didn't take advantage.
You know, the opportunity cost to acquire Taylor Hall wasn't huge. Everybody thought it was a good move. He was coming into a
situation too. Don't forget that.
Yeah, and he was coming into a thing where he didn't have to be the guy, so not necessarily the pressure. Do you think his performance in this series will give the Bruins pause for thought about potentially re-signing him?
I think so, yeah. I think so. He was underwhelming. Now, I want to be totally fair to him because I think it's important to be fair to players when you're judging, especially in these situations. I think he got hurt in a fight with Scott Mayfield, if you want to know the truth.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it'll be reported that he was not 100%. Taylor's a big guy, thick guy, but he's not big like Mayfield. Mayfield's 6'6". Mayfield stung him, and Mayfield, I think, had his way with him in that. And that was the matchup that the Islanders were worried about forwards against that line. They were worried about D, and so it was Nick Leddy and Scotty Mayfield. So Leddy's a really good skater, very efficient defensive player, has to play on the left side, not the right side. He can't pivot to his right, but he's very good on the left. And Mayfield is outstanding on the right side, so that's a head-to-head matchup with Taylor Hall. And for a 6'6" guy, he can really move. So that was a good matchup for the Islanders, and that really caused some problems for Taylor Hall.
Would you agree with Taylor Hall that when any of the physical skills go, he quite simply doesn't have the vision or hockey sense to operate? It's not from a lack of trying?
No, it's always been part of the deal. There's a powerhouse there. There's unbelievable horsepower under the engine, or under the hood, I should say. Yeah. But the problem is that the creativity's not always there, and probably you wouldn't say he's the most creative player in the league. What he is a straight line player that has to get the puck in transition and just drive hard to the net. And if he doesn't do that, then you're not going to get a lot of quality playmaking out of him.
So Patrice Bergeron, 35, year left on the deal. Brad Marchand, 33, but 4 years left at a very digestible number. Then we get to David Krejci, 35, UFA. Mm-hmm. Taylor Hall, we just talked about. Tuukka Rask, UFA, 34 years old. Do you think the mandate from in Boston is going to be as long as Marchand and Bergeron in particular, and of course Pastrnak, is needless to say, is in there as well, we're going to run it back and keep trying to push this rock over the top of the hill? Or do you think they'll take this opportunity with some salary cap space to maybe do, I'm not talking about tearing it all down, but do a fairly major reconstruction of the roster this offseason?
It depends on what happens with Krejci. We're going to find out pretty quick. If they're able to get Krejci to take a hometown discount and they keep him there, then I think they're going to do what you were just talking about and try to keep it alive and keep it going. But if Krejci doesn't, they don't have the internal. I know they have Studnicka, but I don't know if he's a second-line player in the league right now. Basically, what happened was Donnie's first draft as general manager, they missed. You know, they missed on, they had 13, 14, and 15 in the first round. They got DeBrusk, but then they missed on Zboril, and they missed on Sinishin. So when you look at it, they could have had Barzal, they could have had Shabbat, they could have had Kyle Connor. There were a lot of guys they could have had that they didn't get, and that would have changed the dynamic of their team. So that first draft kind of put them in a tough spot in Boston when they had those three first-round picks in a pretty deep draft. So that's one of the things they got to look at. But I would say that you're probably looking at, if they don't get Krejci signed, you're probably looking at a bit of an overhaul.
The sting of that, Pierre, you pointed out that draft, but would you say overall that just not drafting good enough has finally caught up with the organization?
Well, part of it's too, they've tried to stay relevant. So if you look at it, again, you got to be fair to these guys. The NHL is a tough business, as you know. So they win the Cup in 2011. They go to the final in 2013. They go to the final again in 2019. They're relevant that entire time. They're very relevant that entire time as a franchise. So they were trying to keep it on the rails, of which I totally understand. So sometimes they were sacrificing picks. They weren't picking very high, obviously, and some of the drafts weren't as good, even though they were pretty steady. They weren't as good. So, to be fair to Donnie, the one caveat to this whole thing is his first draft wasn't particularly good, and that's kind of put them in a tough spot.
All right, Game 6 tonight. Vegas is back home with a chance to finish off Colorado. The Golden Knights absolutely dominated them in the games in Vegas earlier in the series. What are your expectations for tonight along those lines?
Yeah, well, if they don't get McKinnon going offensively, I don't think they have much of a chance to win on the Colorado side of things. It would require, if McKinnon didn't score tonight, it would require Grubauer to probably make close to 45 saves, give up maybe one goal, and get a bunch of offense from other people because they need Nathan going. And you got to give Vegas a lot of credit. And Pete DeBoer is a heck of a coach. He's done a real good job with that team, getting them back in after getting pile-driven 7-1 in Game 1 with Robin Leonard in goal. And so this all comes down to star power for Colorado. And if they don't get McKinnon going, I don't see how they're going to have a Game 7.
Real sense of urgency on the Vegas side to finish this off in Game 6 and not worry about going back for a Game 7, and not looking forward, but saying, hey, let's get this done with and let's head on to Montreal play Montreal?
Yeah, I think so. Knowing their team, having done so many games there since they've come into the league, they always have a sense of purpose and urgency at home. And I would say this year in particular, because there has been the disappointment of the last 2 years, you know, losing in San Jose and then obviously losing last year to Dallas, I think there's definitely a sense of urgency that they want to get this done. They don't want to risk fate by going back to Colorado for Game 7.
If the series ends tonight, you know, your bosses at NBA, will we see some semblance of one of the series starting this weekend? Do you know that?
Yeah, well, I would say yes. That's all I can say to you.
Okay.
But I would say yes.
Okay, fair enough. I want to talk to you quickly about the Norris Trophy nominees announced yesterday. Victor Hedman, fifth straight year. He's only won it once.
Mm-hmm.
Is a nominee, and then for the first time, Adam Fox and Cale Makar. Do you think that's the right top three that were chosen?
Yes, I do. Those are on my ballot. When you put your ballot in, you got to put five in.
Who are the guys that were close for you?
I'm going to tell you right now because my ballot's right here.
Nice.
Christopher Letang and Shea Theodore.
Wow. So you consider on Letang a major comeback year, Pierre?
Yeah, he had a huge comeback year. If you look at Pittsburgh and the way they played, if they don't have Letang and Crosby, they're not even probably a playoff team. Those guys were just so darn good this year. It was crazy. That was my ballot. Those were my five, the three guys that are the nominees, and then I had Theodore and I had Letang.
From a stat side, do you think Darnell Nurse will get some love? Because he certainly.
I'm sure he will. I'm sure Darnell will. Yeah. You know, again, everybody quantifies things differently.
Yeah.
I'm sure he. I'm sure he was on a ton of ballots. I'm sure he was.
How much more difficult as you came together with your names for all of these ballots was it for you because we didn't have interdivision play?
Big. It was very difficult. You had to watch a lot of games and you had to watch a lot of tape. Because you can't just do it by numbers. If you're just doing it by numbers, then it's a pretty easy selection process. You just take the top five guys with all the top numbers. That's not how I did my ballot. I've never done my ballot that way. And so you got to watch a lot of games. You got to watch a lot of tape.
Points-wise, Victor Hedman had, he's right in the mix with those other two guys. But some people considered this, especially the second half to his year, to be a bit of a down year dealing with an injury. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, 100%. The most consistent defenseman in the NHL this year was Adam Fox, for consistency in every aspect of the game. The only defenseman that was a point-a-game player was Cale Makar. He's the only guy in the league. So if you're doing it by numbers, he had the best numbers per capita. He was 100%. He was 44 games, I think, just going off the top of my head.
Yep.
44 points.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's impressive. He's the only guy that had that. Fox was amazingly consistent the entire year, both offensively and defensively.
I'll ask you your personal philosophy. Doesn't mean it applies for everyone. Mm-hmm. With some people, when they vote on things, whether it be halls of fame or whether it be, in this case, awards in sports, there's the adage of you kind of got to make your name first before I'm going to make you number one.
Yeah.
And other people are like, hey, if you're the best guy, you're the best guy. I don't care if you're a rookie. What is Pierre McGuire's philosophy on that?
If you're the best guy, you're the best guy. I don't care where you come from. I don't care if it's your first year in the league or the 20th year in the league. If you're the best guy, you're the best guy. I've been talking about it all year. Stone should have been a nominee for the Selke Trophy. He is. Marchand should have been as well. It was a tough group with Bergeron, Barkov. They're the guys. But if you really wanted to be fair, and I'm sure there's a bit of a bias because some pundits don't really like Brad, should never equate into the voting system. That guy had an amazing year offensively, and it can be argued he's the best defensive player in the league. Just watch him shorthanded. It's just crazy how good he is. So, you know, again, I just go by whomever is the best. It doesn't matter how many years of service. I'm just trying to think here if I can look at my ballot just to give you an example.
Would you say that Hughes in Vancouver and Heskin in Dallas just had average years, Pierre?
I would say that Heiskanen's year was average, and I would say a big part of that was COVID and the weather situation and the lack of rhythm for Dallas. They had a really, really difficult year there. And for Vancouver, I think, again, it was a lot COVID-related for a lot of the players there. They just had issues there the whole time. It was really, really difficult for both those teams, and I think it affected their players big time.
Okay, last one for you. We were talking Ray Scherer, of course, who began his management career here in Ottawa and has moved on and been a longtime general manager in the league. He's landed a senior advisor role to Bill Guerin in Minnesota. And we were just, kind of spitballing about how here in Ottawa, Maybe it might be a great idea if you know, they brought in a similar type of, you know, veteran experienced voice here in Ottawa. Do you think that's that sort of thing is necessary? Not you know, not just in Ottawa, but in all organizations, to have that, you know, been there, done that kind of guy, especially with a younger general manager like Pierre Dorion is?
I think it's really important to have somebody you can bounce ideas off of. I think it's important to have somebody that understands the league, understands the players in the league. And I don't mean just the players on the ice. I mean the players away from the ice. You know, who's the general manager? What's his mindset? Who are the scouts? Who's pushing the general manager to make trades in all these different marketplaces? You need to be involved in a National Hockey League team. It really helps a lot to have information and to have people that have a ton of information that can help you make better informed decisions. Ray, this has been this conversation with Ray and the Minnesota Wild has been going on for a long time. You have to understand the genesis of it. Billy Guerin was traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins, the general manager that acquired him, Ray Sherrill. When Billy was done playing, Ray was still the manager. Ray got him going in management. Randy Sexton and Ray Sherrill are best friends from St. Lawrence, and also obviously from working together in Ottawa. So Randy's now the top assistant to Billy out in Minnesota. So it's a perfectly formed group. There's a lot of trust there. They've always shared ideas. And they see things, maybe not always the same, but they see things where once they have a meeting, they can come out of the meeting and say, okay, you know what, even though we disagree, we're going to agree, just because that's how they work. They've got enough trust.
And in the situation here in Ottawa, Pierre, would you just see that as a positive? It's not taking a job, it's coming into support. And if you were given that job, would the first thing you'd do is extend Pierre Dorion's contract and say, listen, we're going to work on this for the next 3 to 5 years, and let's build a team right here versus coming in to make somebody nervous?
I think Pierre's contract should have been extended already, to be perfectly blunt with you. He's done a really good job there. So... they're one of the real, I think, going to be one of the real top teams in the league. This reminds me a lot of when you saw Tampa starting to come along, when you see the Islanders starting to come along. You know, I made mention last night, and I got a really nice text from somebody close to him about how, you know, Lou Lamoriello is a very, very dear friend of mine, and I respect him a ton. So I gave him credit for what's gone on with the Islanders, but people forget conveniently that Gar Snell is a guy, a lot of these draft picks that are playing for him, whether it's Brock Nelson, talking about the Islanders, or Ryan Pulock, or Adam Pellick, or Scotty Mayfield, those guys weren't drafted by Lou's regime. They were drafted and cultivated by Gar Snell's regime, and Garth did a heck of a job there, and he deserves some credit for that. And it reminds me a lot of what's going on in Ottawa right now.
All right, good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. Rest your voice. We got a big game 6 coming up tonight out in Vegas. We'll talk about it with you tomorrow morning, and maybe at that point be able to set up the NHL's semifinal series.
Maybe I'll know where I'm going.
Yes, exactly. Well, it's is it east or west? No idea yet, or what?
See, so it's going to be interesting, Jay. I'll just leave you this. I'm sure the fans are going to be bored of hearing this, but what happens if Vegas loses tonight and there's a game 7 Saturday? I don't think I'll be going out to do that. So the game, there has to be an NBC game on Sunday. So I would imagine that Tampa and the Islanders would start Sunday.
Right.
And so, yeah, you're not getting from Colorado to Tampa for an afternoon game. That's not working. So I would imagine that our crew would go down there, and then maybe we would flip-flop.
Gotcha.
I have to be on a conference call today at 4:30. To go over Canadian health protocols, so I would imagine that. So I would imagine that our group's going to be doing Montreal and whomever wins in the West.
Gotcha. Sounds good. All right. Look forward to it. Really appreciate the time and insight as always, and we'll chat again tomorrow.
Have a good one. Take care, everybody.
This is TSN 1200.
Welcome back, 8:45 on this Thursday morning, and yeah, TSN 1200 will be your radio home of Euro 2020. It all starts tomorrow. We'll have a match of the day on weekdays. So the opening match tomorrow, of course, Italy, huge, taking on Turkey. It's the opening match of the entire tournament, and then on the weekend, we'll have a full coverage, 3 matches a day. Well, 2 Saturday, 3 on Sunday, and then a match of the day during the weekdays throughout the tournament until we get to the knockout stages, and then we're all in over the next month. So you love your soccer. You love this is top to bottom,
yeah.
Actually a better tournament than the World Cup. Now, the World Cup is the World Championship,
yeah.
This just in. But top to bottom in terms of quality of teams, there is nothing that beats this particular tournament.
Yeah.
A lot of people looking forward to it. It all starts tomorrow.
Yeah, first time watching any of it, Jer. 1982 at the old cottage. Paolo Rossi in Italy coming along. Didn't know much, and I'm assuming for our Italian friends, super passionate. Preston Street will be rocking. They didn't qualify for the last World Cup, right? So is the program on the upswing, obviously, or...
Sorry, which team?
Italy?
Italy, yeah. Yes. Okay. They had an old guard there, and they've kind of moved in with some new faces. And I think, and we'll have Luke Wildman, the voice of soccer on TSN, on the show tomorrow to preview Euro 2020. That France, of course, which won the last World Cup, is returning 9 of their 11 starters. So they are going to be loaded if France is. And this is maybe the best English side that we've seen in a while. And a lot of people are thinking England has a very good chance to go a long ways. In fact, I think their manager said, if we don't make the semifinals, at least it will be disappointing.
Wow.
So a lot of pressure on the English, but a lot of course, they won the World Cup in 1960. They're kind of like the Leafs. It was England in 1966 for the World Cup last time. Leafs won the Stanley Cup in 1967. Yeah. And since then... it's a lot of bravado on the from the fans and not a lot of results.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Both fan bases think they invented the sport. And so that has been the criticization of England for a long time, right? Was that they were kind of like, well, we're the best and, you know, not following on other countries. So
there are others that can speak better on this than I. But my thought on it as someone who loves the sport, but I don't pretend to have all the answers. Like I do with other sports, is that, listen, the Premier League is the best league in the world.
Yeah.
The problem is, by bringing in a lot of the sports superstars, what you've done is you have in a way neutered your somewhat the development of your, you know, they've got a great club-based system, but in terms of just developing your own country's players and late developing players, that in a way, by bringing in so many foreign players, kind of neuters your player development.
Yeah,
that's my theory.
No, you're right, Jared. It's just a really funny thing. When I worked in Belarus, both working with the national team in Minsk, we kind of went half and half, and it was really a funny argument, and this happens all the time. When you try to control quality, though, and I'll say this with the CHL, like my argument would be, well, if there's enough good players playing against the best competition, but then you look at, say, domestically, the German league that always has a great national team, and almost every year it's either Bayern Munich or Dortmund that win, right? So, you know, it is really an interesting dilemma of, do I give them spots? And we're facing that here in Canada now with the Canadian League, right? Do I do that, or do I want them to face the best possible competition? It's a really, really healthy discussion to have on development.
Well, for a while, it was not that long ago, right, where the CHL banned European goalies, right? Because we want to, and we're still at the stage now where...
How has that worked out?
The number of Canadian goalies, our quality is not where it should be for the amount of players that we have in terms of goalies. So for a time there, it was kind of like, well, part of the reason we're doing that is we got too many European-based goalies coming in. The Finns are dominating, the Swedes, whatever. Let's just bar them outright and just develop our own goalies that way. And then they've decided to change that back again. It didn't seem at the time to be the right answer. Still does not seem like that. But, you know, the list of Canadian, you know, it starts at Carey Price now. Carter Hart, I still think, is going to be excellent, but had a bad year.
Yeah.
There's just not a long list of really good Canadian goalies.
No, and again, for me, when I look at this and I say with the National Hockey League, what has in creating and allowing all the best players in the world, and it's also funny, too, how we're always in Canada saying, we got to stop this. Well, a lot of Canadians, JR, have made a living outside the country, and especially in the United States. The NHL and the American Hockey League is the best of the best. And you can look at why that is, and could it even be, you know, feasible anywhere else on the planet? But still, trying to get that. And I always thought the Canadian Hockey League, when they made the decision to bring over the import players, like, what has the Rossies? And you just go through. Like all of the teams, like it's just great. It pulls along the kids, and they'll say, "Oh, you're taking spots from Canadians." Hey, man, this isn't minor hockey. This isn't sign up and you get to play. I mean, these are businesses, and by the time you reach, at least to me, the CHL and anywhere higher, you know what I mean? You should be always trying to have the best. But to your point, trying to create that balance in England. I think also what England has finally realized too is maybe a little diversity on the team might help too. You know, when you look at the team, they athletically appear to be far better than they've been in the past.
We will see. It all starts tomorrow. England's first match, by the way, comes up. It's a good one. Taking on Croatia on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. So they get a tough test right out of the chute. As I said, like top to bottom, best tournament They're really there are a couple of minnows, but pretty much every match you're going to watch should be very, very competitive. So we look forward to it. And again, it all starts tomorrow, 3 o'clock here on TSN 1200. And we'll take you right through to the championship game, which comes up on July the 11th. And you can watch all the matches as well on TSN television. Okay, 8:51. Brad Shaw, who just landed an assistant coaching job with the Vancouver Canucks, is going to join us on the show coming up in about 20 minutes or so. So we look forward to that. A couple of texts have come in at 12-1200. Can we arrange a fundraiser to get some bigger underwear for the Islanders play-by-play guy? The poor guy sounds like his boys are in a vice grip. That's from Mike, the Raiders fan. He becomes a bit of a Johnny High voice at moments, but it's I'll say this.
Yeah,
it's a unique sound.
Yeah, I kind of wondered, like from Dodgeball, where he electrocutes his nipples, JR. I don't know if some of these guys, these are self-inflicted, or you have a button, you're doing it, or if a guy next to you just cranks it up and puts him into a vice, because, yeah, certainly. Who was it the other night we said was mimicking the Tampa Bay announcer? Was it the Islander guy?
Or it was the Islander guy,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's...
The
Man, I know.
It is better than the Condor.
Yeah, I can imagine the condor. I can imagine Phil legitimately having a nap at times, and all of a sudden this guy starts wailing to the point that Phil almost has the big one. Hey,
let's see here. Unsigned. Well, Islanders fan in Ottawa writes, "It's night and day. New owners, building a new arena. Lou Trotz. This from there were 25 years of not very good New York Islander hockey."
Oh.
Lou Lamoriello comes into town, and again, we'll see what happens with Toronto. And I'm not saying they made a bad choice in Kyle Dubas. Did it come down to, in retrospect, it was Shanny had to decide it was going to be one or the other. I believe was he offered the job in Colorado.
Yeah,
correct.
No, it's a great
and they
point.
They wanted
Jared.
To keep him,
no, yeah,
and it was kind of like to keep him.
Yeah,
we're going to have to elevate him, and to elevate him means that Lou had to leave.
Yeah, no, you're right, and I think Lou was surprised, and also I think Shanny realized at the time. I thought they offered Lou the opportunity to stay on as an advisor,
yes,
and he said, "Forget it, I'm moving on." Yeah, I understand that. And also for Dubas, it had been set up where he's groomed. They ended up basically buying a Calder Cup in the American League, but he still won it. So good for him. But man, that experience and just what we've talked about here in Ottawa, I'm not taking a run at Dubas or Shanny. They're both very intelligent people. But also, JR, let's be quite honest here. Brendan Shanahan has never won a thing in his life as an executive, and he's never actually had a job. They're 7 years in as a duo. They don't have anything to show for it. Like when we talk about Ottawa needing some help, Pierre Dorion in his past experiences in Anaheim, a little Rangers, a little, Montreal, now here in Ottawa. Well, it's been a roller coaster, but he's won some playoff rounds. He's done a whole lot of amateur scouting. You talk about guys that need some help. Don't look any further than the Toronto Maple Leafs. So for the Islanders, yeah, incredible where they're on. And isn't it cool? What's about that blue jersey, JR, when you see it on? Now you just look back and say, wow, thank God they brought that thing back. Because as you said, the disaster from Milbury to Snow, it was a joke the way it was ran. Now you see the uniform, you see the culture there, and they've recreated the culture and got the fan base super fired up. It's awesome to see.
Interesting, though. Pierre, and I think rightfully so, did shout out a little bit Gar Snow. A lot of the players that are on there, some of them at least, key players on the Islanders, were guys that came in when Gar Snow was the general manager. So, Lou has made some key acquisitions. We need to look no further than JG at Pageau and the impact he's had in that lineup.
Yeah.
But several of those players,
for
the life of me, Islanders fans would know this, but Scott Mayfield.
Yeah.
Who thinks about Scott Mayfield? I was looking it up because JG Pageau is a plus 11, and not that plus minus is everything, but it is, it's an interesting stat. Scott Mayfield's the only guy in the playoffs doing better right now at plus 12.
Yeah. No,
You could go and Scott Mayfield could walk into the building and no one would know who he is.
Yeah. I guess it was just the roller coaster all the time. On one hand, you give up a first round pick to get rid of Gabrovsky's contract. Gabrovsky.
Grabowski.
Grabber. He's my buddy, too, from Belarus.
Apparently not.
But then you turn around and make the trade of the century. Good old Mr. Reinhardt for the first round pick that ends up being Barzal.
Yeah. And a second, it was the first round pick, which was 16th overall, they turned into Matthew Barzal. They also got a second round pick, which was a high pick, which they flipped
to move up to the back end of the first round. You know who they picked with that pick?
Beauvillier.
I haven't. So the Barzal and Beauvillier, they with a little bit of something extra is what they got from Edmonton essentially for Griffin Reinhardt, who doesn't play hockey anymore.
Oh, and you could see was stinky and was in Edmonton, part of the old regime, and that is fun, Jared, because I was going through yesterday to see Adam Fox, and the fact it was 2 second round picks that ended up going to Carolina, and it was interesting to see that one of those second round picks they traded to Ottawa. Took a second and a third for a couple of anonymous guys, and Ottawa took Sogard. So funny to see how the trickle down of what was Fox and Hamilton and could end up turning into next to nothing and end up giving up Aho, or not Aho, who are the couple guys that went? Noah Hannafin and who? The centerman.
Talking about the Calgary?
Yeah, the Calgary.
Lindholm,
yeah. Yeah.
So, that was
a
trade. You know what? And Adam Fox was chosen by Calgary, was not going to play anywhere else but the Rangers at the end of the day. And Calgary came to that realization that they weren't going to be able to sign him NCAA, so they moved him as part of that deal. And I think they're relatively happy with Elias Lindholm and Noah Hannafin. Dougie Hamilton turns out to be a real good player, but now he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. Yeah. He moves along with the rights to Adam Fox. And I'm trying to, was it Michael Ferland? I think was the other part
exactly,
of that deal.
Exactly.
Ferland
has
now moved on. Hamilton could be moving on. Fox ends up getting traded to the Rangers because he was essentially manipulating the system to end up where he wanted to.
Yeah.
Carolina ends up getting, as you said, this 2 second round picks, which they end up then moving out, and one of them turns into Matt Sogard.
Yeah.
Sometimes these trade trees are really fun to go through.
No, they really are. Or even some of the picks where they're traded before the guy ever comes into the National Hockey League. And obviously that would be a case of Barzal. So, hey, it is amazing on Fox. And also, I think rightfully so for Sens fans, JR, every angle as far as young defensemen coming in. But it's pretty cool. Only 2 years ago, both Fox and Cale Makar were up for the Hobie Baker Trophy. I guess, would that be the year that Cale won? I guess it would be, right? So he moved on. And I think a lot of Sens fans, and rightfully so, I think for Jake Sanderson, would look at this year being his sophomore year and where he may propel in a couple of years. Now, the offensive game hasn't been where Makar has been, but it was his freshman year. So I think I saw a couple of those tweets yesterday. And I think that's... I think for a lot of people in the hockey world that next year World Junior, next year big year in college, bigger role on the power play, that, hey, that'd be fun if he's in the conversation with those guys in a couple of years.
As we watch Mark Stone score overtime goals and, you know, help the Vegas Golden Knights potentially with another win tonight be in the Final Four again, there's a lot of Sens fans lamenting like he's the one. He's the one. If they're only going to keep one in the rebuild, he should have been the one. But again, $9.5 million for 8 years is a lot of money. Yeah. And again, if Ottawa was in a rebuild, would it have been the right decision? Because by the time you were good again, he would have been good. But he's a great influence. Like, I get the debate on both sides.
Yeah.
If we go to the next one and we say, okay, Mark Stone is gone, J.G. Pageau. Was traded for a first and what ends up being a first and a second. The first round draft pick was the one 28th overall last summer, which they chose Ridley Greig, who looks like he's J.G. Pageau light. They would absolutely love it if he'd.
Yeah.
You know, in retrospect, the Islanders are more than happy to make that deal. Yeah. We're seeing what impact he has.
Yeah.
Do you think, given their druthers, would they like to have kept J.G. Pageau?
I'll say no, JR. And here's the thing with Pageau that I didn't like is that when he signed the contract after playing the year with Stone and Smith, I always thought based on his junior numbers and American League numbers that he would emerge. I never felt like given opportunity here in Ottawa, and part of it is the two slots open right now, I never felt like he was capable of doing that. So I'll say no. And also to Stone, because we do have some fun with it based on the return, would I want Mark Stone right now for the next 5 years with Ottawa? Hands down. Because what I'd end up doing is maybe flipping someone to the left side and I'd play him with Stützle. But I'll also recognize, without talking out of both sides of your mouth, I don't know if you're the top five worst team in the NHL with Mark Stone in your lineup. I think he's that good of a player. So I can't say that you're going to bottom out with Mark Stone and then pretend that, well...
And you don't have Jake Sanderson.
Well, exactly. Like, pretend that, Mark Stone can on any team. We've seen it. He makes people better, JR. I could argue that pick may slide to 10. So to make him go away for a couple of years, would I want him to come back now? Sure. I don't have a problem in the next 5 years. But let's realize that he would have made Ottawa a better team. So maybe you don't even get those picks. You know what I mean? So, hey, you've moved along. We'll see what happens with the rest of the guys. But especially on Pageau, you know, based on where he's at, based on the money, I don't think he ever lived up to that contract here in Ottawa. But come playoff time, certainly love to have him.
Oh, man, yeah. He is just – and that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. But, you know? But for Ottawa, where they're going, I guess, I'd be more worried about where Pageau's out in a couple of years. Just wondering, you know, where does he realistically fit in money-wise? And then they also had made the decision on White where they were going to go with it. So
yeah. And you know, and that's if you look at JG Pageau signed a 6-year deal for $5 million per year. Colin White signed a 6-year deal, you know, just a little bit less actually.
Yeah, for sure.
When you think about the impact of a Pageau versus a White right now, and I know Pageau is much older and much more experienced.
Yeah.
But man, you watch these games with the Islanders, and his fingerprints are all over every single game, and it's not just
for sure.
That he's the third leading scorer in the playoffs with 13 points. You know, Pierre went through it defensively, matchups. Just coming up big in big moments. He does it all.
Yeah, might remind some Islander fans not too much more or not as good, but Butch Goring, like certain guys, JR, and you make trades. And you wonder how they're going to fit in. And knowing Barry Trotz and anybody else, he's just a dream to have. But I also looked at Pageau a couple of things. First of all, I believe we were on the air when the trade happened, JR, and we were both like, wow, okay, we like Pageau, but I think we turned the page pretty quickly. And then the other thing, they went around and did the contract after the fact. Lou Lamoriello called Craig Oster and said, well, I guess I have to give you something. That's a lot of dough. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have been personally for where Ottawa was at the time. I wouldn't have been comfortable with that contract, but I also wasn't comfortable with the White contract.
Right, but it's the same argument though with Stone. Would Ottawa not making the trade, keeping Pageau, signing him to the deal that the Islanders ended up signing him with, and then you're in the middle of a rebuild.
And
JG Pageau is a great player and a great leader, and absolutely you love to have him in the playoffs and everything. But if you're a non-playoff team. He's not helping you in the playoffs because you're not making the playoffs.
And
by the time that you are going to be a playoff team, I'm not saying that he's going to be, you know, he's not going to be a good hockey player, but what is his relative impact going to be at that stage of his career?
Yeah,
It's understandable. It's just you're watching those two guys in particular.
Yeah.
You know, and they could meet in a, you know, if the Islanders get through Tampa and it's not impossible and Vegas gets through to a final. I could make the argument that JG Pageau could be the most important forward on the Islanders, and you can certainly make the argument that Mark Stone is the most important, and they were both former Ottawa Senators. There they are in a Stanley Cup final.
For sure. And you can only, as you go through rebuilds, JR, and you ship out a lot of players that Ottawa shipped out, you hope that one day one will turn into what Zibanejad's turned out to. One will turn into Stone. One will turn into Pageau. One will turn into a lot of guys that you gave up in the prime of their career, without a doubt.
Yeah. And as you're shipping things out, always remember to ship your pants.
Oh, man, absolutely. And that's a key. That's one of the keys there, making sure.
All right, a little past 9 o'clock. We will take a break, get you the latest news from 580 CFRA, run down the scoreboard for you, including how the Islanders knock the Bruins out, and they're moving on to play the Tampa Bay Lightning in the semifinals, probably starting this weekend. And then when we return, we are going to talk with Ottawa guy. And now got himself a new job out in Vancouver. Brad Shaw is a new assistant coach under Travis Green with the Vancouver Canucks. We're going to talk to Brad Shaw when we come back right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.